An army of Englishmen made an assault on a Russian stockade. Outmanned and outgunned, they turned and they runned. 'Twas the charge of a backlight brigade. So begins Alfred Lord Tennyson's famous limerick opus, which commemorates the Crimean War battle in which hundreds of British troops were shelled with tons of pastries made of layers of chopped nuts and honey. The Battle of Balaclava also introduced to modern warfare polypropylene hoods, which the infantrymen wore to shield themselves from the fruit flies that swarmed over their ambrosially festooned bodies. Then, as now, they were best laundered in cold water and left to drip dry in southern Europe, i.e. the infantrymen and the fruit flies. That is an excerpt from Le Sacre du Helicopters by Igor Sikorsky, The Rights of the Helicopters. Some say the attack it was senseless, and the odds against they were immense, yes. But the Cardigan Duke swore their strength was a fluke, and assured us the Reds were defenseless. Sylvia Smiley Face Plath, noted Fulbright humorist, captured well the lighter side of the mid-19th century drumming in this selection from The Bell Pepper Jar. All around me, bombs and trampolines! Ha! What made me laugh? Baklava, baklava! My croquet ball is stuck to the sticky wicket! Help! I mean, ha! The Earl of Cardigan sweats like a pig in a blanket, convalescing. All around me, tramps and bombazines. Goodbye now. I have to launder Sevastopol's Central Park. Witty delirium from America's queen of a posteriori neuroses. Boy, that's strange, but it works. A century later, Karl Terzaghi explained the battle as he best knew how in terms of soil mechanics. Take a baseball, he postulated, preferably one that has been roughed up during batting practice by the Odessa Ospreys. Place it in a microwave oven on high for 30 seconds, long enough for the seams to steam. Get a flowering petroleum jelly plant. The best ones can be mail-ordered from Portugal. Harvest the nectar from a dozen buds and spread it evenly over the baseball seams, which should have long since ceased steaming, assuming UPS two-day air delivery. Take the baseball to a barley field in the Crimea known to have been frequented by crop circles. Facing north, unroll a 200-foot roll of duct tape, sticky side up, in the field with one end touching the baseball, the other end touching a pod of barley awns. Now, re-roll the tape into a big ball, trapping the barley inside. By the time you reach the baseball, the pods will be throbbing, which should activate the jelly nectar and chemically alter the constitution of the baseball innards. Foam will leak from the seams. This is good. And here, Terzaghi's description ends with no explanation as to why this is good. We fought like the mythical Rambo, though maneuvers were based on the Mambo. We gave him a shiver, singing Cry Me a River, but they clobbered Le Orange Flambeau.
Flambeau Orange.
Mr. Tennyson's verse goes on at length as this prelude to the 75th episode of Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar surely cannot. Good news to those of you, present company included, who prefer music to verse in 2 out of 3 taste tests. And here with more or less of the latter, depending on availability and whim, is Calvos,
who withdraws immediately so we can listen to the glories of Mr. Sikorsky's helicopter music.
My goodness, that's just the way Igor Sikorsky would have wanted his le sacre du hélicoptère.
I totally agree. Wow.
Well,
welcome to episode number, what did you say?
What anniversary is the 75th?
Diamond.
Ooh,
we should
jubilee.
Get new styli for our good old turntables here. Our Diamond Jubilee 75th anniversary show of the Kelvis and Damian New Music Bazaar. And just to celebrate that today, we have brought you some of the least comprehensible interviewing you will likely hear on the show.
And I think to complement that, some of the least comprehensible best-o-bazaars. We have one, and if we're lucky, or if we're not lucky, two best-o-bazaars. We have numbers 11 and 13 ready.
Ah, well, good enough.
If that's too many, we can certainly postpone the festivities.
Oh, never. We never like to postpone. So, okay, well, we're going to have our let's do our little announcements first. Here's the announcements for today. First of all, our guest today will be Peter Bales from Raging Belgium.
Oh, yes. The Belgians have come back to festoon the radio waves.
True enough. And we'll have the opportunity to tell our tale about getting lost in beautiful downtown Brussels.
Ooh.
Just before the interview. What else? Oh, our website, www.maltedmedia.com, and going to Calvos. Calvos has just broken 18,500 visitors so far this year.
Broken them how, financially?
Completely. At least it's broken somebody financially. So please join us at the website at your opportunity. And that's all of the announcements, I think, for today, unless you have a few.
What about the upcoming musical concerts of the next couple of weekends?
Oh, yes, please tell.
What about them? Oh, next weekend begins the Four Square Festival of Vermont composers.
It's actually Four Score, but I like calling it Four Square, too. As a matter of fact, I did put that into the advertising and didn't realize it. I thought it was pretty Four Square.
Four Square stall scores of performances in Manchester and West Brattleboro next week.
Yes, next week. Brattleboro first on
right.
Saturday and Manchester on Sunday.
Playing some squeaky violins, some tunes, some Calvos and Damian tunes, we are led to believe, but we don't know what.
No, that's right. We don't know what. And then the following weekend, which be the 9th and 10th, they will be in respectively...
Or yes, but not responsibly.
In Montpelier and Burlington.
Yes, the... Flynn Theater, is it?
No, I'm afraid not. It's the, what is that place? University of Vermont Redstone Campus at the big hall, wherever the recital hall, the concert hall there.
Yes.
And then in Montpelier, it will be at Bethany Church. And there will be music for flute and piano.
But yes.
Bring your sandwiches. Music for voice and piano. Bring your sandwiches. And then sandwiched in between will be music for piano, as well as electronic music by the Truly Yourses behind these current microphones.
El Grupo, having been given another chance, there was a concert which El Grupo did in Montpelier in early to mid to late August.
And right.
Supplementing it with excerpts.
Excerpts from Circular Screaming, which will be on the 10th of November in Montpelier at Bethany Church. So those are the announcements, upcoming festivals. You can always call us at 454-7762 to find out more. And also, if you'd like to guess at the two composers who were represented in the Igor Sikorsky we played for you, but we'd love to hear from you. Reese Chatham. We interviewed Reese Chatham a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
And we were missing his piece for 100 guitars.
Were we really?
We were. I'm afraid we were.
Does that
we even admitted it.
Yes. But we can now conveniently squeeze this into the interview recording, so he will be none the wiser that we didn't play it at the time. Is that correct?
Probably, yes. But it has arrived. It's called An Angel Moves Too Fast to See, And this is the fifth movement, if you can believe that, for 100 guitars. It's 13 minutes long, and we're going to play it for you. So there's a couple of drummers and 100 guitarists in this performance, which, where was this one done? Let me just see if I can find the detail. This was done somewhere. It doesn't say. In Lille, at the Agence Acacia de l'Aéronef in Lille, France. So here we do, the 100 guitars of Rhys Chatham plus drums.
Oh, good. I've been looking forward to this for so long.
I know you have. An angel moves too fast to see.
Thank you.
Les 100 guitares, the 100 guitars. An Angel Moves Too Fast to See by Rhys Chatham. Yes, why are you smiling?
I'm thinking about 100 Julian Breams sitting there just whacking away on those strings. Have we played enough guitar music for
This year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think for this show we played enough guitar music, so we can go straight into something unlistenable.
Oh, good. What might that be?
You mean on the Calvis and Damian New Music Bazaar on WGDR Plainfield?
I might have asked that eventually, but no, that's not what I meant.
Well, we were in Belgium, you may recall.
I do recall.
I think we did tell the story of the problem we had finding places to stay and such.
The motel escapade was,
right.
I think, documented.
We did document that. And then we got into Brussels. That seemed to be fairly easy to do. All roads did lead to Brussels. They have these vast motorways in Belgium. They don't seem to do anything except drive and have Belgian fries.
Plus have Flemish fries and bright lights, night lights.
Right, the sodium arc lamps.
Right.
And so we got into Brussels, which was kind of a modernish European city of no character that I could make out.
I thought these sidewalks were very pleasant.
Yes, flat.
Flat, yes.
Yes, they were that. And if you attempted to talk to anyone in Flemish, they answered in English. If you attempted to talk to them in French, they answered in English. So that was hopeless. But we, after twisting and turning and getting many wrong directions in this very curious Belgian subway system with these funny little cards you stuck in that it ate and then spit out the other side.
With debits taken
yes.
from the amount.
We eventually arrived roughly in the area that we were supposed to be, and we followed his directions to the letter. He said, go out the back of the subway station, which is also a train, yes, and then sort of left a bit, and then up the hill on a specific street, and we did that. I said when we got to the top of the street, it would come to a T, and if we went straight ahead, we would go into a kind of a concrete playground of a school, and that would be the school.
Right, this was a school of other repute.
Well, it turned out to be a bit of a delinquency school or something, sort of a French-speaking junior high school. And we got lost in the complex of things and little snickering 13-year-old Belgian
ruffians.
Walhoons. What do they call them?
Poltroons.
No, there's a... I'm not sure if the Flemish or the French have... Anyway, I don't remember the name. So it's Walloons. Is that it? Walloons. Anyway, I don't remember. But anyway, they were there snickering at us because we were looking helpless and older than them. And then we made our way to the first adult-looking person who was a bit uncomprehending at any attempts at English, so I switched into my ever so elegant American-accented French, and she promptly brought me to the headmaster. And he spoke to me in his one phrase of English and then took me into the... Did they put you in prison during this event, or were you...
They led me to the laboratory.
Is that
for
what it was?
No particular reason. I admired the sink and the basin op-out parts, and then I was let out.
Yeah, something to that effect. Then we made our way to inside the headmaster's office, where he switched back to French, which was a great relief to him. And we called our interviewee, who was Peter Bales. I love that little name kind of sound. And he said, oh, you're in the wrong school. And I said, well, we followed your directions. He said, oh, it's the next school. And so we went to the next school, having been led by a delinquent let out for the day or something, to the next school. And we went in, and they were the Flemish-speaking school. Well, wasn't that nice? But they hadn't heard of him either. They looked him up in the directory, and they said, oh, he's in the other door. Well, the other door involved walking around an entire city block because the two buildings connected from two sides. And apparently the maze was so complex they didn't dare let us go through. Well, eventually we found him many minutes late, did our interview, and then followed the lunch fiasco. Well, it turns out they wouldn't take our money there at the place where we wanted to eat, and they sent us away. What did we have with us? Guilders or something. And they said they didn't want to change those, or francs, you know, not Belgian francs. We didn't have enough Belgian money. They said, go to the bank and get some. Well, the banks are all closed in Belgium during the lunch hour. So we couldn't do that. And it was getting more and more hopeless trying to change any of this money. So we went back, and we had What did we have? A Belgian waffle. And what did you have? Did you have the waffle or did I have the waffle?
I have no recollection of that. Just it all seemed to vanish.
It was in the back in the train subway combination station, and we got out of Belgium. And of course, we did have some Flamse frites, some Flemish fries on the way out. They were a very bad batch of them. Anyway, that told, in the midst of all this, in the interview segment, we found ourselves absolutely unable to comprehend most of the discussion. We were well over our heads. You'll see how that works out because, well, don't laugh too hard. Any questions, call us while this is running at 454-7762. I think we'll start out with a bit of the music, and then we'll get to the interview itself because he only gave us one piece to play.
I think it's important, though, that we should tell the... Ah, there it is. The audience that this interview has been... What has it been done? It's been altered so that it has been made more comprehensive.
Right.
Peter is fine.
Yeah. Peter is fine, good. And you are a... Tell us about what you are.
Well, I teach here at the school, but I also do... for many years I've been doing research on... trying to find out what computers really mean to the artist and how computers can be used as a means to express yourself as an artist. And I've been trying to develop... The only way to do it in a good way, I think, is to write programs and not just use off-the-shelf commercial software. So the essence of me for using computers, the strongest argument, I would say, is that when you're using computers and as a medium to program, is that you can touch your ideas. So computers are a way to a very flexible means to find out what you're really after.
Are computers today at a level of power where you can do that? That you can really do that, or are we just touching that? Now?
Well, we certainly have at this point. I've been using computers for over 20 years, but at this point, I think that you have a very small and powerful home computers that are indeed powerful enough to do very complex things. But there is no real relationship between the complexity of the computer or the performance or the performance level or the sophistication of the machine in as a function of the ideas the sophistication of the ideas you try to express as an artist. The computer doesn't guarantee any quality from the aesthetics point of view.
Right, but it would certainly be hard to perform a contemporary, let's say, clarinet concerto on an instrument that was still made up exclusively of holes without keys.
Yes, exactly. But the objective is different, of course.
Okay.
And that's... the things I do really is on two levels. From the musical point of view, I also developed a couple of graphic expert systems. So
okay.
I'm also active as a visual artist. But for what concerns music, I'm interested in two things. And one is autonomy. That is, how can you build computer programs that contain some of the intelligence which is needed to solve aesthetic problems and to make decisions, musical decisions, in an intelligent way. And the other idea I've been working on for many years is the idea of collaboration, or what I've been calling social computing. That is where you have a man and a machine, and where you're trying to build structures that allow easy understanding from man to machine and the other way around. So how can you build an ear, for instance? How can you simulate certain human perceptual capacities, I could say, into a machine, so as to build bridges between the two?
And how do you set about doing that?
One program I've been working on for many years, and that exists in various incarnations, is a program called OSCAR, which is an acronym for Oscillator Artist. And the first version of OSCAR was written about over 10 years ago. And the key idea here is that really the whole thing is based on a social model, not a scientific or purely artistic or conceptual model, but a social model in the sense that OSCAR is a computer program that is designed explicitly to interact with a single human being. So the machine tries to express its own character, its own personality, while at the same time it tries to accommodate the external world, the human interactor. So we have some kind of a conflict here, the conflict between expression and integration. And that is really the motor of the program. And that's the beginning of the idea. And that takes us to various studies on perception and how can you in fact simulate parallel processing, which is a natural thing in a human being, and how can you do that from the musical point of view into a computer program.
Mm-hmm. Now, an American audience would be what we would call product-oriented. So maybe you can address the question in terms of what it does.
Yes.
And what results we can hear from what you have done, and the experience of interacting with this. For example, Henningberg actually personifies his computer. He thinks of it as another person.
Yeah.
So,
well, me too, in a sense, because OSCAR is that's the whole thing. And I've always been thinking in of computer programs in terms of kind of personal assistants or artificial creatures that coexist with me. And so I'm not interested in computers as considering machines as slaves, but as collaborators, as partners in the process of aesthetic decision making. So what you try to do is delegate, in fact, the power of collaboration and decision making to a machine. And to do that, well, we hit the key problem, that is creativity. How can you formalize and implement certain aspects of human creativity into a computer program, which is, of course, pretty difficult to do, because nobody really knows what creativity is, and there are many different theories on that. But on the other hand, I also like to be pragmatic, and here we hit the unique possibilities of the computer, because typically in a creative process the problem is very ill defined or even incompletely understood. So how can you program something you don't understand? So this is where help from the machine comes in. Because in contrast to what many people think, you have to, your idea has to be finished, you know, in a sense, before you can even program it, which is not true. I think you can develop ideas by implementing them. And see the results, so you get feedback from incomplete ideas, which takes you to the next step, and so on. So I've likened the computer to a kind of a conceptual microscope.
Okay.
So you can look into yourself. It is a vehicle for introspection.
As creative artists, we also are always at an incomplete level and get feedback from ourselves and from others. So is that what you're trying to emulate with this?
Not really. What I'm trying to say is that when you implement a very simple, even a simple idea, and then you get feedback, and you always the feedback is always different, so you get things that were not anticipated by the programmer. So this in fact sheds light on your true objective. So it, as it were, you were in AI, in artificial intelligence, which is my background. We talk about search, so you and exploration. So you find yourself in a search space or a conceptual space, and what you try to do is go to this point, which in that space, that is in fact the solution of your problem. And but because of one thing is that the space changes while through the act of searching, you see. And Vic, could, yeah. Yeah, it's good. Okay. So we had a visitor. The space changes through the act of searching itself, because in every step you take in a search process, new territory is exposed. And again, that was not anticipated. So one of the fundamental characteristics of a search process is that it is not linear. You cannot say, well, I have this problem, I will use that machine as an assistant and go there and see what happens. No, because you will jump in that space according to what you find, and this is typical to a creative process, I think. And this is also one of the very dangers of working with computers, because you can get yourself trapped into what I call the eternal design cycle. And because
some of us have that problem when we compose too.
Yes, yes, yes. But you know, a computer amplifies this.
Oh, I see.
And you get feedback, and you see the whole. A pretty complex computer program can consist. It's a system you make, and it consists, like Oscar, consists of about 60 modules that run in parallel. And at a certain moment, You find yourself as if you are losing control over the machine and over the computer, because the complexity becomes too big. And this is a general problem with any rule-based system. And this is what led to the use of complex dynamics and self-organization as an alternative to knowledge. And I've been exploring these two approaches in depth in many different applications.
There's a popularization of the idea in America of fuzzy logic.
Yeah.
Are you using that in this? Are you turning that in as your second approach?
Well, there are two approaches are growing closer together these days. And the first experiments with Oscar was that it's a purely rule-based system,
yeah,
a classical kind of real-time expert system,
right,
or what's also been called a pattern-directed inference system,
mm-hmm,
you know. And but the problem with that is that if the machine is faced with a situation that it does not understand, there is the system breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
So you need something that allows for a graceful degradation in performance. And that you can find a solution for that in nature, because nature has these abilities of natural adaptation and so in fact the problem is that we want to arrive at we want to get to a truly creative system, that is a system which can both interact and be and express itself on an autonomous level, right? So the first thing you need is responsiveness. We want to make something interactive,
yes.
So it has to be responsive. So if I do something, it has to respond. On the second level, it has to be adaptive, which means that if large swings in context occur, the system has to adapt flexibly. On the next step, you could say, well, intelligence is involved, which means for me that the system has to express a certain personality. On the next step, you would expect a learning system, so that it can learn from experience and learn from examples from the outside world, and that is, you know, learning is the key to intelligence, I think.
Does it take on your personality? Is it you? And if I can continue. Does it require a start each time with a blank slate, or does it keep a history?
Well, I have one version of Oscar that keeps a history, yes.
And the personality?
In the personality question, well, obviously, since I am both the thinker or the conceiver of the program and the programmer, it is clear that Oscar has certain characteristics of my own character, but I'm really trying to have a system that is complex enough to surprise me, and which is a difficult question. But that takes us back to your other question of the relationship between rule-based systems and complex dynamics. So that on the one hand, if you rely on explicit knowledge that you can formalize in rules, okay, well, that will work given certain conditions, etc. On the other hand, if you rely on self-organization, like it's the case in so many behavior in nature, you find yourself having an open-ended system that can eventually evolve to something completely different. So and that's the way to go, I think, because with explicit instruction, rule-based systems, the search space or the conceptual space in which you work is limited, and it works for that domain, right? But if you start using complex dynamical systems, and I'm not really talking about chaos or fractals or things like that, but truly open-ended systems on the molecular level, in fact, or molecules, I should say agents, which is better. I'm doing a lot of work with agents, and So what you have is another problem. You have critical mass. You have you're trying to solve the problem by defining certain relationships or what I've been calling affinities between agents. So an agent can be a musician having its private MIDI channel, and you can devise some kind of computer animated interface so that you can see and hear how the agents behave. So what you really do in the second application with complex dynamics is invent your own physics. Inventing an alternative world in which your music is supposed to grow rather than be constructed. So instead of building architectures of time, what you do is create a favorable environment for compositions to grow, as it were. And the ultimate step in that direction is, of course, genetic algorithms. And,
So, at what stage are you? Are you at a stage where you can perform with the program, or can it perform on its own satisfactorily, or is it...
Well, I've been performing with Oscar for 10 years, and Oscar is designed explicitly to interact. It has its own character. It does not have pre-stored sequences or anything like that. So everything is invented on the spot, but it has memory. Both short-term and long-term memory. So it has a lot of, it does automatic memory management, it knows when to forget something, things like that.
So go ahead.
Well, the question of autonomy, I have another program, which is called Louise. And Louise is named after Louise Brown, which was the first artificial, what do you call it, test tube baby. Mm-hmm. In England, so Louise is a pianist, plays the piano only. So I'd like to restrict, and just having my private musician sitting there in the corner of the room and playing from time to time. And so Louise plays the piano from time to time, and it the program again is based on a whole collection of generators, transformers, critics. It has a number of critics, etc.
So in the last couple of days, we've had conversations with Tango and Oscar and Louise, and in America, we have another one, another program called Yanni. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yanni, which is the New Age musician?
Exactly, but it's really a program.
Is it?
It's controlled by some person, I think, in Des Moines. Uh-huh. Everything is done, the laser, the visual of this of this composer is all under control. And I'll jump back in as soon as we get back to some other Allegro or Fandango form.
You had a question about two of the same, or two of these programs that we're acting.
I did?
Yes, the Henning last night. And I think this...
Well, Henning's work is really, truly interesting. I know it very well. But his idiom, as it were, is the jazz idiom. And so he starts off from a very rich culture, as it were, and tries to work from that, and trying to have a number of harmonic progressions, etc., and make that adaptive. My approach is very different. Although I have a program called Harmonic Navigator that allows you to navigate in harmonic space, but I've never really, I don't know, but some of the programs, I have lots of programs I've never actually used to compose music. And that's the problem with writing computer programs, you know. And but anyway,
you had mentioned that sometimes Louise is off in the corner, just playing by herself.
Yes.
And is this also true of Oscar? And if so,
no.
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 But can Louise play off of Oscar? Or
no.
Do a duet?
No.
Leave you somewhere else, and then you can go out and get some cafe.
No, not really. No, not really.
But you said that, yeah. Can you not make it?
Louise is not interactive. It's an autonomous agent.
But if Louise is playing, can Louise be you, in effect, and play, and Oscar then react to...
Oh, that would be possible. That would be possible, Oscar, to have Oscar react to what Louise plays. Yeah. I've never tried it, actually. It would be possible. Yeah.
How does it sound?
How does it sound? Well, good question. I don't have any tapes here, but I will have to send them. Some people say Oscar sounds pretty aggressive. And also there are so many levels so many levels of collaboration. You know, Oscar can build some parallel line delayed on what I've played in the past, or it can, you know, try to make counterpoint structures in real time, or it can make it can repeat a certain sequence which it has in memory and transform from that. It also has a nice feature that's called exploration, because if Oscar considers that nothing really interesting is happening at some point, it goes back in long-term memory and tries to explore it and come up with something it considers interesting that has happened in the past.
Is this strictly your program or from other engineers?
No, this is my own baby, as it were.
Turning back to something that you said earlier and sort of slid by, let me ask it in terms of a question. Has it ever truly surprised you?
Oh, yes. First time I there were some very dramatic moments, really, when I was working on the second version of... There are three versions now of Oscar. Three, you know, major versions. I can show you one of the second version of Oscar when I was at the AI lab. Because I should also say that we built a number of alternative input structures. I haven't said anything about that yet. Like violin with a computer inside and wind controllers. And when I was...
Does it go in by MIDI?
Well, it goes in by MIDI. Mm-hmm. That's the easiest way. I have a number of programs that are truly an artificial ear. You connect a microphone, and that has four buffers to compare in space and compare in time, and some simple spectral analysis. But at the time I was working, which that was about 8 years ago or something, you know, we didn't have the ISPW workstation or anything, you know. I abandoned that because I simply didn't have the technology available at that time. What was your question?
Well, to get back to the element of surprise.
Oh, the element of surprise, yes. The second version, one evening, late at night, I got the program running, you know, after a couple of months of you know, simply having written a number of basic drivers, Evie. Nothing very special for me, anything sophisticated, but suddenly it worked, you know, and it was so much expression that I was really surprised.
When you were surprised by what it did.
By what it did, yes. Yeah. So it did more than I had ever anticipated, even from this very simple thing, you know.
Did it simply surprise you, or did it make you happy? Did it make you angry?
It made me, I can tell you, in a very emotional way, without being romantic. It has nothing to do with being romantic or not, but in a very emotional way, I realized that I had built something which was purely artificial, yet it had these features that speak to the soul rather than to the intellect that was put into it to build it, you see? So I was kind of an emotional shock I had, yes.
What, in the course of all this, would you say was the single thing that you did which was the most important? For yourself or for the world?
For myself or for the world?
The pioneering act.
The pioneering act. Well, I've been using computers from 1970-71, maybe. What did I do at that time? Well, I was trying to, as so many other people, trying to control randomness, and trying to build computer programs that you could have a handle or a means to control randomness. You know, and that is still a very, very an up-to-date idea, actually, because if you look at so many work going on in artificial life, like the work of Chris Langton and other people, they're trying to build controllers, software or hardware controllers that with which you can control a very complex world, but using very few controls. That is one of the key problems in any control structure. And another problem is, or another challenge is to, given the extremely sophisticated topology of the human body, how can you map that to a machine, you know? It's very simple to map expressions from human being to another human being, but the machine has, you know, has trouble understanding the most basic of human gestures. And that was a thing which led to the creation of the infrared violin. I think Joel has a picture. Yeah, the infrared violin is one of the... We built three controllers many years ago in collaboration with engineers at the Artificial Intelligence Lab. One is a wind control, the second one was a violin, third one was a bandoneon. Uh-huh. It has a computer inside. There's another guy, an American composer in Amsterdam, Nick Collins.
Yes,
whom you have. Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, ask him to show his bandoneon. So it's wonderful. It's actually more sophisticated than mine, but his software is also very different. My software, for many of the controllers, actually, my software is modeled after or very strongly inspired on Marvin Minsky's book Society of Mind. So where you have this wonderful idea of having many, you know, different simple processes that interact on a local level and give rise to global phenomena that we call, you know, intelligence or musical or, you know. And so my violin, I call it the infrared violin because it has infrared sensors built into the strings. So basically what you have is four strings, which means four continuous controllers. Yeah. So the bow has another infrared sensor, so you have five continuous controllers, plus a number of special function keys, and the neck of the instrument has an 8-bit input strip, so you can send, you know, 256. Yes, like having a switch,
yes.
You know, mm-hmm. And to the software, and the software interprets the gestures, okay. What I do, and can store them in memory, and you know, and so the
does it store exclusively the physical gesture? In other words, how?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It doesn't store any samples, but it stores samples of the physical activity that was going on the instrument. And then that, of course, is translated and mapped to MIDI, and so I can play the solo instrument and the whole symphonic orchestra will sound, you see? So it does automatic orchestration in real time. And I've been performing a lot with this violin up to a number of years ago. And
do you use that to interact with Oscar?
No. The wind controller originally was developed to interact with Oscar, but the new version of Oscar, which I'm still working on right now, can also listen to more than one musician. So it can compare. It can be some kind of a social sensor, as it were, and make an opinion about what's going on in a small society of interacting musicians.
Do you think that'll increase or decrease the level of surprise? Will the averaging, as it were, of the two decrease that level, or will it come up with something even newer?
Well, it will come up it's another problem altogether, uh-huh. Because if you consider Oscar, there are many models. Actually, I had a paper at ICMC in San Jose on this thing, on the idea of let me think, dynamic models of musical interaction in virtual reality. Mm-hmm. That was the title of the paper, and there I have three or four different strategies that you can consider yourself. I mean the outside world. How can you be present inside an algorithm or inside a program? There are many different ways in which, or degrees of intimacy, as it were, with which you can be connected to your algorithm. You can control a parameter, which is the most simple thing you can do, like having a knob, you see. But you can also be present inside an algorithm by, for instance, using cellular automata. If you have a cellular automaton and you consider yourself inside this, a cell inside, you know, the string of the automaton, then, you know, you can, you, it is as if it were that you are present inside this automaton, which is something completely different. Or you can say, well, I want to interfere with a social climate, and then you are an agent expressing a certain affinity towards all other agents that happen to be in this space. Or you can, well, there are many different, you can consider yourself a conductor. You know, I have one implementation with the agents where I'm using a power glove, so I can put my hands inside this collection of agents and move one, say, and then the whole society will have to rearrange itself to reestablish harmony in the society. And that is translated into music.
So speak, if you will, to the listener to popular music. And
yeah.
Say, here is what I'm doing, what I do now, yeah. Will mean to you now or will mean to you in the future? How will this affect how I hear perhaps popular music?
Yeah, I consider myself a product of popular music. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I grew up with, you know, with David Bowie and Frank Zappa, which I love, you know.
Clearly, most listeners to popular music do not associate.
No, exactly.
How would you translate?
Exactly. Popular music is has this wonderful physical presence, which I like. Maybe it's because I'm working all the time with my brains. I'm squeezing my brains, you know, and that probably. But anyway, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, so what would you expect, I mean? And also, I have something else to say on that. One thing is that what I call the physical parameters, or the sensuality and the sensual parameters, they, of course, are overdeveloped in popular music. In the avant-garde, they are underdeveloped in the avant-garde, and they are extremely well-developed in ethnical music.
Very interesting, yes.
You see? Mm-hmm. So we have different degrees of sophistication there. And but, you know, that's probably, well, the idea of physicality, like building this violin, was, you know, to tackle that kind of problem. How can you channelize the physicality? How can you map the complexity and energy in the human body towards a machine? How can you make a machine understand and do something useful with that information? See? And that's also one of the reasons to perform, you know?
So that's the reason why when we ask you the question about Louise playing with Oscar, it didn't seem to interest you.
Not really, because it's another problem altogether, and that is the case with much of my work. It fits like in kind of different approaches, general approaches to creating intelligent and creative machines, and you know. Like one of my most recent efforts is I'm building a workbench using genetic algorithms, and that is of course another, I would say, mental effort or intellectual effort to try to, you know, to explore what genetic algorithms really mean and how you can, definitely one of the means to escape from the dominance of ideas you happen to have at a certain moment, because genetic algorithms, if they are open-ended, can, you know, push you to another level in search space, you see? And you can work from there.
If you've had all the time, all the computer power, and all the help you needed, what would be the program that you would create?
Well, first of all, it would be difficult to it would not I mean it would not be a trivial thing to find a good group of programmers. You know, there are lots of good programmers, but
assuming you could snap your fingers and they would be before you, would you create a person? In other words, would you create a musician?
Oh well, I would probably one of the things I'd be interested in is to have a society of agents that live on the internet, and that would require extremely fast internet links that are not really available yet today. So like fiber optics would be necessary, and at that point you would have this society of maybe hundreds or thousands of artificial musicians living on the internet that could jam together and at the same time accommodate human input, so there would be respect from both sides, I would say, because respect and responsibility are also very important things in my work, in the sense that I'm not naive, of course, in thinking that music will change the world, but I'm absolutely convinced that any musician has a certain responsibility, because it's so easy to forget the outside world, as it were. Programming can be as bad as watching TV.
Or playing a video game.
By that I mean that you can become, you can see the world from the wrong perspective if you program, in the sense that you can have the illusion of power which is not there. So that's important to know. So what I do is I teach computer graphics here, and aesthetics, and a number of courses, introductory courses on computer programming for graphical applications. And although we don't do any desktop publishing here, things like that, what I do is, you know, creative approaches to using computers as yet another tool, and be as free as possible. And I have a course on the history of science and technology in the arts, which I like to do. And what else? I do music, and research, writing computer programs, and then I do some consultancy work also for companies, and especially computer graphics and virtual reality applications.
Do you and Oscar go to coffee houses any time and sit down when there's an open mic and just jam? Do you have open mics in Brussels?
No, we don't have any open mics. Not in the same sense that you mean.
But seriously, have you ever, just among a group in almost a coffee house type setting?
Yes. Yeah. Long time ago. I also did some concerts at openings of in exhibitions.
Uh-huh.
Because that's long time ago, and that worked very well. And That was at a time that at a certain moment in the late 70s, early 80s, there was a kind of a culture of having concerts in coffee houses, mm-hmm. especially in the UK. And I was actually, I've lived in London for 3 years, uh-huh. studied there at UCL. And after that, I started traveling and worked with Bill Buxton in Toronto. Then did some teaching at CalArts mm. with Mort Subotnick. Yeah. And I lived in Brooklyn, then I went to Japan, you know, so anyway, I've traveled a lot, and now I find myself back in Brussels.
And now you've got to go, in just a few minutes, you've got to go back to teaching, so
yes.
I'm going to let you do that, and thank you very, very much for joining us today. I'm with Helmus and Damien, New Music Festival Hour.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Peter Bales and his computer program Oscar having a duet.
I counted eight endings, eight separate endings.
It's not bleeding Beethoven.
It certainly is not.
It's not. It's Peter Bales. It's got a couple of the same letters in it.
Yes.
Oh, right. Eight endings. What is it? May I count with that little stopwatch?
That's right. On WGDR Plainfield.
Oh, yes, that.
FM.
FM.
91 point something.
Yes. That was called, it had a name. It's called The Headless Horseman.
No, there were eight heads, all at the end.
Well, he was talking about, what was it you liked about that? It was intelligent agents. He had a world, a universe. What
I
it was
did.
It? You wrote that down.
I did, because it was such a society of agents.
Oh, I like that. Society of agents.
There
wonderful.
There are two people walking out of our studio with electronic.
With equipment and CDs. Excuse me. Let's put on the best of the bazaar.
Yes, we're WGDR employees.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm sure. Highly efficient.
Right.
Anyone want to
Polka party, yeah. Uh-huh. Why does this happen?
It just does. This is a popular venue for transients here, not necessarily
yes.
for people calling in on 454-7762, but just folks stopping by and doing nothing.
Well, let's do the bazaar.
The bazaar, the best of the bazaar. Last week was not enough. The best of the bazaar, Mark 10, finally, after a 5.5 month absence, and we figured, let's go for more. So now we have the best of the bazaar, Mark 13, listenable snippets from episodes, I think it's 61 through 66, something like that, however, whatever numbers 13 contains. And this will surely entertain you, much the same way as Peter Bales' music also entertained you, but in a different vein. Here now, Best of the Bazaar, Mark 13.
It's harmlessly out of our way.
It's harmlessly out
of our way. It's harmlessly out of our way.
I was thinking as well.
You know, as you came down.
Howdy. Well, I'm a classically trained pianist.
Howdy.
Well, I'm a classically trained pianist.
Howdy. Howdy. Howdy.
I hear this music.
Howdy.
I I'm a classically trained pianist.
Howdy.
Well, I from somewhere. I can't give you a location.
A different kind of an experience.
Howdy. 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 Howdy.
I have no clue.
That's a wild goose.
Catastrophic.
Concat cakewalk.
Can't imagine why not.
Concat cakewalk. One into the other.
Serious.
It was impossible to realize World Fair in Osaka and your bosoms were in the space. Friendly, real, the same boucle by Morten at the very moment, but you know, not knowing if I will be. Actually, I don't want 88 and he's male, definitely male. Briefly.
With a hand tool.
Well, you know what they used to do at the old parties and stuff. Plixaw, the hum spinner, high hummer, Irakpra, Rakwam, Kamarai. Their shoes are inflatable.
Would I kid? We never kid on this show.
It must be partly a coincidence. They are very... Mm-hmm. Well,
I had many problems. I was not really... So I stopped it. I had a growing... And I remember I was... And it was living in space. Okay. Traditional... on the other hand... So, yes, normally, always, that I imagine it. And I try to far away way to use...
And it's been like that ever since. 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 And it's been like that ever since.
And it's been like that ever since.
It sure has. Ooh, I enjoyed that. That was much to my pleasure.
Do you want another or do you want to save it?
No, I think we should play something else. We got some agony.
Right, yes.
All queued up.
That's because there is a tie-in to the day. It's the...
An Italian, what?
An Italian, although not Greek, but an Italian. What was this? Who was it?
Mimaroglu?
Right, Arshal Gorky.
Oh, Gorky. What? Please explain. What does that have to do with agony?
With the back of the record jacket.
I have to read the back of the record jacket. Agony. Visual
study number
four. After Arshal Gorky. I never read the subtitle of this. This is Ilan Mimaroglu's piece. This was written in, 1965?
A long time ago.
Yes, 1965. We'll play part of this, not all of it.
No, not all.
Part of it. This is an excerpt from Agony by Ilan Mimaroglu. Visual study number four. After Arshal Gorky, as you said.
Thank you.
This was not just agony, but agony in me. I think this was very well done, only if we had an audience to watch what was occurring here. This is not just a single performance, exactly.
Yes, this is a phase-shifted pair of the same recording of agony. Kind of giving a little of that DJ flavor.
Right.
Yes, this is for DJ agony.
So if you want to scratch the stylus across the face of mine, it probably wouldn't make much difference.
Well, it has that nice rushing sound at the beginning. You were saying that you had all these LPs stacked on their side in a garage for 12 years?
In an upstairs cedar closet.
Ah, oh, that counts for the aroma.
Right. That and the moths.
Yes, the agony of the cedar. By the Cedars of Babylon, something like that. Babylon 5 Cedars, agony.
I don't get
word
Babylon
association.
Five.
Ah, I'm sorry about that. Well, let's just fade out this. We have a new CD in the box here, with a new piece by Glenn Branca called Les Honneurs du Pied, parts 1 and 2. This is from a new CD called Century XXI to distinguish it from the real estate brokerage. Electric Acoustic USA 2. This is a series on Entone Records. It's not available in this country, but this was forwarded from Reese Chatham, whose 100 guitars we heard at the beginning of the show. So let's go out with this is all stuff that has to do somehow with guitars, and this is not...
That's C-A-T-A-R-A-R-H?
Yes. Rhymes with hemorrhoid.
Right.
It has all those H's in the odd place. This is Les Honneurs du Pied by Glenn Branca.
Oh, boy. New tune.
Music by Glenn Branca, part one of his new tune on Entone Records called Les Honneurs du Pied.
That was kind of nice. Is he a French guy? Where does he come from?
Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Well, that's pretty French.
Is that French?
Sure.
Harrisburg.
Yes, oui.
How is that? Is that better?
Much better.
Oui, so, okay. And that was performed by the New York Chamber Sinfonia. Somehow, because everything else I heard on the CD was guitars, I figured that that would be too. Wrong.
It had sort of a guitar-esque quality to
it. I'm sure, yes. Recorded at the Manhattan School of Music Studio. Isn't that lovely? So, okay, music. Oh, gosh, our time is up. We've run out of time.
As well we should.
Next week, new releases. We've got a whole box load of new releases to play for you, so we'll have new releases. No interview with a composer next week, but if you want to hear more about Peter Bales, you can inquire at our website. Some of his computer-generated artwork is up there as well.
I mean, you can play it? Is it animated? Is it
it's
fun?
It's not. I wish it were fun, but it's, you know, you could download it and print it and stuff.
Oh, that's
stuff.
Good.
How's that? Stuff.
Oh. Yeah, like stuff.
So, www.maltedmedia.com gets you to our website. Please have a look. It really, you know, we prattle a bit on the show, so you don't have a chance to sort of congeal the concepts the way the composers might like you to. So have a look. Next week, new releases, and that's
and another
it for,
besto.
Oh, another besto. Best mark.
I don't know,
12?
Either 12 or 13. What was the one? 12. Well, 1. Yeah, some. 12, perhaps.
Anyway. Well, the polish, spit and polish metal boys are here, and we've got some.
It's nice to see them dressed in chains this week.
I think it
reflects the music that they're about to descend upon.
True. Chains and those nice two-tone shoes. The combination is rather amazing.
I'd never knew Buster Brown was an acid head.
Oh, absolutely. I think we better play this.
Yes.
Should better start from the beginning. Perhaps should better start from the beginning. Perhaps you had better start from the beginning.
A production of Multimedia.